The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov and Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, yeah, Happy Valentine's Day to you. This is the alternative version of Tu B'Av.
Correct.
And I hope that everybody will use it in order to bring some love to the world. Just before we get into some very, very serious discussions, because of course tensions in Europe are very high at the moment and Israel is not immune from that, but I just wondered what people thought about the latest notice that went out from Tottenham Hotspur Football Club in London.
Yeah,
for those who are football supporters. Mm. This is a club that has traditionally been supported by Jews over the years, one of the two main North London football clubs, Tottenham and Arsenal. Spurs have had a very, very strong Jewish support base. And over the years, the supporters of Spurs have been called Yids. And this is something which is already well established. This is something which is well known. It's not something that's new. Now, I'm only guessing, and maybe if there's Spurs supporters out there, they'll add to this. But I'm guessing that the reason that the Spurs supporters became known as Yids is because that's what they were most part. And it might well have been used as a derogatory term, but it's nevertheless been taken on by the supporter base of Spurs, and they've used it and they've described themselves quite happily as Yids.
I've noticed
and they
that,
use
yeah.
a Magen David as their symbol, and Israeli flags are very evident in their supporter base. Now the club has come out and said, please don't call yourselves Yids, please don't use that term, for fear that it might have some sort of an anti-Semitic connotation, it might draw anti-Semitism towards the supporters, whether they are Jews or not Jews. And the club has officially come out and asked the supporters not to call themselves Yids and not to be referred to as Yids. Now, I just wonder what people feel about this. There's so much that we can say and talk about, but unfortunately, we've got other more important things perhaps that need to be spoken about. This is really on the back of a report that shows that the increase in the anti-Semitic events in the UK has been quite dramatic in 2021, massive increase in the number of anti-Semitic incidents that took place. Is it right that the management of Spurs should ask their supporters not to refer to themselves as Yids? By the way, there's another club in Europe, Ajax, which is also very, very filled with Jewish symbolism and also a very Jewish following. I mean, there's stories about Spurs supporters, Orthodox Spurs supporters who went along on Shabbat to watch matches with their game ticket pinned to their clothing. So as not to transgress Shabbat, although I'm sure that halachic pronouncements will be interesting as to whether that's within the spirit of Shabbat or not. And we will leave that all to one side. What do people think about the fact that
3451 or 0618951019, especially if you're a Spurs supporter, I'd be fascinated to hear from you if you consider it to be a offensive, problematic. Does it change how you view your club? So let us know what you think. A lot of concern around the Ukraine. We've been talking about that a lot this morning. Israel's formulated a plan to evacuate Israelis and Jews, in fact, out of the region. Wow, this is a very, very scary situation.
This is a very scary and significant situation. There's so much to talk about. There's no way we're going to be able to talk about all of it today, because this is not only a very, very specific issue, obviously the conflict between the Ukraine and Russia, the fact that the London Daily Mail found it appropriate to publish an article over the weekend which says that Putin has decided to invade on Wednesday. That was a very fascinating one indeed. Perhaps that's true, who knows? But obviously a lot of concern for the people of Ukraine in general, a lot of concern about what it might mean for peace and security in Europe. As far as Israel is concerned, so many different angles to it. First of all, let's not forget that Israel, there was an attempt to draw Israel in to the mediation efforts, which both Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and former Prime Minister Netanyahu both refused to get involved with. And Israel's stance at the moment is, we are neutral. We don't take any side, not of that of the Ukraine and not of that of Russia. We have interests on both sides of this particular border. Many Jews in Russia, many Jews in the Ukraine, many Israelis in both countries. Israel has no interest in taking a stand. However, the loss, the fact that is that Ukraine may well be incapacitated in some way or another as a result of an invasion by Russia is of concern. The Ukrainian deputy foreign minister was in Israel yesterday meeting with Israeli foreign minister Yair Lapid. She made clear to Lapid that a war in the Ukraine would be very significant to Israel. Israel imports wheat, grain. Israel imports many other things. There are also reports about eggs in this period as we lead up to Pesach, because apparently with the problem that Israel has experienced with egg supply through bird flu in Israel, Israel has been dependent upon imports of eggs from the Ukraine and from Spain. We understand that Spain has now had its own outbreak of bird flu, so Ukraine is really left as the main source of supply of eggs to Israel. And we're going towards Pesach, and everybody knows what it means to have eggs for Pesach. So a war in the Ukraine could, heaven forfend, affect our egg supply.
No, well, that's not a joke. Then they must sort this out, Anthony.
They have to really.
Yeah, no, I mean, now it's gone too far.
But apparently, 10,000 to 15,000 Israelis in the Ukraine at the moment, many of whom are students. 2,000 of them, we understand, are students of Arabic background. Israeli students of Arabic background in the Ukraine. Israel has already chartered something like 30 or 40 flights, which have been booked up to bring Israelis from the Ukraine. The government has said to all Israelis, get out of the Ukraine and do so quickly, because obviously there is concern that there might be a conflict that might risk people's lives in the Ukraine. You know, we can have the opportunity over the coming days to talk about what the significance of all of this arm wrestling is, why President Putin feels that he wants to show his strength at this particular time, the potential weakness of European leaders right now, a new chancellor in Germany, a relatively laid back leader in the United States, someone who's considered not to necessarily be as vigilant and as aggressive as the previous regime, the UK Prime Minister having to fight the battle that he's fighting at the moment to stay in office because of his transgressions of COVID restrictions that were laid down in the UK. Ironically, people seem to forget that he was one of the main casualties of the early the early wave of COVID. He was very, very ill indeed. And it would be very ironic to find out that he might have picked up the virus as a result of not adhering to his own lockdown rules. That is a separate discussion in and of itself. But also, this brings in so much more, because it's also about NATO. The Ukraine is not a member of NATO, but is very closely associated with NATO. Turkey is a member of NATO, and the most eastern country of NATO. Is President Putin trying to test NATO at the moment as to whether it will get involved? If the Russians have crossed the border into the Ukraine, what will NATO do, if anything? Is this something like what the Nazis tried to show in Czechoslovakia before taking on the rest of Europe, just to see what the reaction would be? A very, very fascinating discussion. And of course, the whole Iranian angle, because Russia and Iran are very, very closely associated. Is Iran going to use this current period of instability to try to attack Israel, to try to attack Israeli interests around the world, to try potentially to launch missiles from the Gaza Strip or from Lebanon? Where is Iran in all of this picture? There's so many different moving parts with this instability. Is there going to be a war in Europe? This is a very scary concept to contemplate. So many different things to talk about. And of course, I do invite listeners to write in and to let me know if they have a particular angle that they feel is relevant. But obviously for Israel, this is a big deal, not only because of the Israelis and because of the Jews in both Russia and in the Ukraine, but of course because of the interests in that area, because of what it might mean for Iran, what it might mean for Israel's relations with other countries in Europe. This is a very, very big deal at the moment.
Do we have any sense of how many Israelis are there?
We understand the number that's been quoted as being 10 to 15,000 Israelis in the Ukraine right now. The Ukrainian Jewish community is much larger. Some put it at around 200,000. There have been plans. All Israelis have been contacted in Ukraine to say, get out. Plans have been put on. Apparently, about half of them have responded so far. The other half are currently being tracked down to see where they are and to check whether they wish to avail themselves of Israel's offer to get out, to come home. But also, there are plans, we understand, to bring those Ukrainian Jews who are not Israeli citizens, but who are entitled to Israeli citizenship under the law of return, to try and bring them to Israel, a massive plan by the Aliyah department here right now to check what they might be able to do to bring those people who are interested to come over. The numbers are very, very interesting. Very few of them, relatively speaking, are actually halachically Jewish. Nonetheless, they are all considered candidates to come to Israel under the provisions of the law of return. So at the moment, the Aliyah Ministry, the Ministry of Absorption and Immigration, is working very, very hard indeed to put plans in place to see whether Ukraine's Jewish community might wish to avail themselves of the opportunity. We understand that of the 200,000 Jews in the Ukraine, something like 50,000 are actually Jewish according to halakha, but that doesn't prevent the others from coming if that's what they wish to do.
What do we know about the relationship between Bennett and Putin? We know about Netanyahu. They had a very close relationship.
Yeah, I mean, we remember that Bennett had a recent meeting with Putin in Sochi. It lasted over Shabbat in the end because the meeting went so long on Friday afternoon. And we also remember that Putin apparently tried to phone Bennett a few times over Shabbat, and Bennett didn't accept the calls because of the fact that it was Shabbat. I think that it would be a little bit difficult to assess how close or how distant the relationship is between the two. I think it's kind of been a relatively okay working relationship in terms of dealing with the main issues. I don't think that we could consider Bennett and Putin to be particularly close to each other. And in fact, I think it's really been a lot of work being done between Minister of Finance Avigdor Lieberman, of course, has very, very close connections with the former Soviet Union and potentially with people within the Putin administration, who's been something of a go-between. Interestingly, by the way, just as an aside, Bennett was working over this last Shabbat, having rejected the calls from the Russian president when he was in Sochi. This last Shabbat, he was working in order to put the plans together to evacuate Israelis and Jews from the Ukraine. We understand that he was forced to, he found it to be a matter of life and death, which is apparently something that you can bring to bear when it is Shabbat, even though he would like to obviously adhere to Shabbat. So I don't know that we can really rely on a close relationship between Bennett and Putin right now. And I think that even though Israel tries to be impartial in this particular conflict and present themselves as not taking one side or another, I think that at the moment, the sympathies at least are very much with the Ukrainian side. There seems to be very little understanding of why it would be that Putin feels the need to actually go into Ukraine, to invade Ukraine with the, I think, 100,000 odd troops that he has on the border with Ukraine at the moment. It will be very fascinating to see what the European reaction and the NATO reaction will be to that, if it happens indeed.
Yeah, well, I do hope that it is something that that at least would be a deterrent, but it certainly doesn't look like it. Turkey claims to have foiled a terror plot against an Israeli in Turkey.
Yeah, so this was an a notice that was issued by Turkey over the weekend that spoke about the targeted operation that apparently was being put together in Turkey against an Israeli businessman who has actually been named in the article by the name of Yair Geller. And apparently the Israeli intelligence forces came together with the Turkish in order to foil this particular plot. We understand that the alleged assassination attempt included a team of 9 people and was directly in response to the killing of the Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsin Fakhrizadeh in 2020, which Iran has, of course, attributed to Israel. And there is still very much an open account to be settled by Iran on this particular matter, and indeed on a few other matters. I think that they have quite a long list of revenge plots that they would wish to carry out against activities which they have attributed to Israel. So this was a plot against an Israeli businessman who is based in Turkey. He's an engineering research. He works for an engineering research and development company. And he was aware of the fact. He was actually told that the Iranians were tracking him and wanting to assassinate him. I don't know that they chose him for any particular reason other than the fact that he was Israeli. Apparently, the Iranian cell had already taken photos of his home, and they had already done quite a lot of intelligence work behind the scenes in order to carry out this revenge plot. But in fact, the Mossad has come out and said that they have actually helped to foil up to 12 attack plots on Israelis in Turkey over the past 2 years. Now, there almost seems to be a little bit of kind of competition going on here between the Turkish authorities, who've been very, very eager to explain how much work they've been done to protect Israelis in Turkey, and the Mossad, who are trying to also claim that you know, they've done most of the work in protecting Israelis in Turkey. We've noticed in recent weeks and months that Turkey has somehow tried to get much, much closer to Israel, having been through a decade or so of very, very shaky relations between Israel and Turkey. The Turks have now come out and made a massive effort, invited President Herzog to visit, and really made a massive effort to try to somehow close that gap down. I sort of wonder whether this is not potentially related to the Russia story, that even though Turkey has become a lot closer to Russia and indeed to Iran in recent years, they've suddenly understood that perhaps Russia is not such a good friend, the good friend that they thought they were, and that that Turkey needs to reach out again to its Western partners, to its Western friends, and potentially through Israel to the United States. Of course, Turkey is a member of NATO, and to the extent that it needs support by NATO right now in this time of conflict, all of that is very, very fascinating in this constellation of stories that we see, including these attempted assassinations, which have apparently been attempted in Turkey against Israelis.
Crazy, really crazy. We don't have a lot of time, but I just want to know what's going on in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of Jerusalem.
So this is really a continuation of all the stuff that's happened before. I mean, Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has been a source of conflict. And in recent weeks and months, the home of a Jewish person who lives, a Jewish family who lives in Sheikh Jarrah, which is predominantly an Arab neighborhood, Arabic neighborhood, in the east side of Jerusalem, this particular Jewish family, which has gone to live in Sheikh Jarrah, and which for some people has been quite inflammatory in the way that they've gone to live in the middle of an Arab neighborhood in East Jerusalem. And that family has been subject to quite a number of attacks against their home, firebomb attacks against their cars. I saw a story which suggested that they've had to change their car something like 9 times over the past few months because the cars have been attacked. So this family has clearly come under a lot of intimidation for moving into that part of Jerusalem, even though there's nothing that legally prevents them from doing so.
Right.
But it's considered to be a starting point for Jews to take over the east side of Jerusalem and to go and live there, to inhabit Sheikh Jarrah in particular. And of course, as a result of this, there have been clashes. Police have been in Sheikh Jarrah. And of course, a right-wing politician, Itamar Ben-Gvir, decided to set up what he considered to be a parliamentary office in Sheikh Jarrah yesterday, which was effectively just an awning with a table and a chair. That was his parliamentary office. And the police tried to gently coax him away from that, saying that this was an inflammatory act. In the end, they were forced to take him out of there more by force. He, of course, has objected to this. He was hurt in the process. He was in hospital. Lots and lots of inflammatory activities going on in Sheikh Jarrah at the moment. And, of course, some of those families, the Arabic families that live there, we've spoken about this, have been living there for some time and haven't been paying their rent and haven't been contributing towards the upkeep. There is risk that they may be evacuated from there. And this was one of the reasons, at least, that were given for the conflict that took place last year. I'm not sure whether it's really a reason why the conflict took place, but certainly it's one of those that's being quoted in all the press as saying this was what precipitated that outbreak in the conflict with Gaza last year. So there is still going to be a lot more in Sheikh Jarrah to come.
No doubt about that. It is 8:01. This has been your Israel Report with Anthony Reich. We'll catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.